TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, the heat has just been unbearable lately, so I brought us a big pitcher of iced Tula Berry wine.
Oh, I'm so glad. Which is weird, Chris, because Tula Berry wine looks a lot like Romulan ale. It's very hard to keep track of, which, you know, has really diluted the Romulan ale market because people think they're getting that and really they're getting Tula Berry wine. I feel so sorry for people who can't keep them straight because they really do taste very different.
Yeah, they're totally different taste. Both can be hard to get. And just, you know, if you're going to order your Romulan ale, don't order it from the cheap knockoff internet sites. I know it's cheaper.
They're the worst.
You never know what you're going to get. So yeah. Just stay away from
that. Well, and it's so hard to get large orders of it. Like, you know, say 100,000 vats, you know, which, you know, if you're going to do a party right, you got to have at least 100,000.
At least. I think you need more than that, especially with this heat. Anyway, everyone, we're going to talk about Tula Berry wine a little bit more today as we continue our 30th anniversary rewatch of Deep Space Nine with Rules of Acquisition. This is the 7th episode of Season 2, and here is a quick rundown of the story. Word is there's profit aplenty in the Gamma Quadrant, and the Grand Nagus wants a piece of it. And who better to send as chief negotiator than Quark? But never forget the 48th rule of acquisition. The bigger the smile, the sharper the knife. Quark's new waiter, Pell, thinks Zek is setting him up to take the blame if a deal for the totally reasonable ask of 100,000 vats of Tula Berry wine falls through. Thankfully for Quark, he won't be alone at the table, because Pell turns out to be more than a waiter. He's a skilled entrepreneur. And a she. Despite their combined negotiating prowess, Quark and Pell return without the wine. But they aren't entirely empty-handed. They have the memory of an awkward kiss and information about some group called the Dominion. So, Matthew, the Ferengi are back, giving us their trademark mix of humor and serious commentary and the infectious laugh of Grand Nagus Zek is here as well. What are your first thoughts on another Ferengi story?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's interesting because in all honesty, you kind of have to have seen this. In watching it in retrospective really makes it different, right? Because this episode actually becomes a linchpin for the rest of the series in the sense of what it does for the larger story. And I think that's what makes this one actually really, really interesting in that sense. Because I don't think anybody watching this episode, you know, first go around was thinking, oh man, this is pivotal. But at the same time, people know by listening, but my wife and I have been watching through Star Trek chronologically, and at this point, we're in the 6th season of TNG, but we haven't even gotten to the point where they cross over with Deep Space Nine, and we're not going to do the thing where we start, like, you know, watching one series and then popping back to the next. That's just too much, too convoluted, and we kind of want to watch some other series and then come back to Star Trek. So we'll finish TNG mm-hmm. and go to Deep Space Nine. But tonight I needed to watch this episode. And she was just laying on the couch. She hasn't been feeling great. And so anyway, all that to say, she watched this episode with me and she wasn't paying too much attention because we haven't watched really any Deep Space Nine yet. And so, but by the end of the episode, I just told her, I said that, you know, one of the most interesting things about Deep Space Nine is that they take a group of characters, the Ferengi, you know, who in TNG really just come off, I think, pretty terribly, because they're not really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Deep Space Nine takes them and really runs with them and makes them such a different race, because they really add depth to them. And so when we get a Ferengi episode like this here in the second season, this one actually does a lot of things to deepen the understanding of who the Ferengi are, mm-hmm. which is wonderful. But at the same time, it's also an episode that allows another character to kind of speak into them as a race who can admire things about them instead of just kind of hate them. And mm-hmm. so again, there's just a lot that happens in this episode, in that sense. And I think that's actually kind of one of the things beyond all of the other wonderful kind of Star Trek things that we do, with the storytelling. This one just allows us to explore the Ferengi and explore them in a way that isn't just trying to make fun of them, but is actually seems to be trying to kind of look at them through a different lens. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's kind of wonderful. And again, Deep Space Nine is so kind of good at doing that with so many of the races that we've seen in Star Trek. So yeah, I think to me that's the great thing about coming into this episode is another Ferengi episode.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing we've heard over the years from listeners and fans talking just beyond the podcast, all the years that we've been doing The Orb, is that idea that you skip the Ferengi episodes when you watch DS9. Yeah. Some people say that. Some people say, yeah, I skip the Ferengi episodes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. This is one where it does highlight the fact that you really shouldn't skip the Ferengi episodes, because I think most people who feel that way do base that on their experiences watching the Ferengi on The Next Generation. Because pretty quickly on Deep Space Nine, you feel that the Ferengi are quite different. And then at this point, they have evolved them enough mm-hmm. that they are a fleshed out society, and they are such a good vehicle for talking about real world issues.
Right.
And doing it in a way that I think you really can dig in to various things yeah. through the Ferengi, that probably because they're somewhat comedic, it works better than it might if you tried to use a different alien species to do it. And certainly mm-hmm. yeah. it would be too on the nose if you did it yeah. with the human characters. But
yeah. Well, you know, this is one of those episodes, again, if you skipped, you would miss our first true kind of breadcrumb for one of the most important mm-hmm. species and parts of the story in the Gamma Quadrant with the Dominion. And look, you know, I think there are kind of some Ferengi episodes that you could skip and not really miss anything for the story. You know, Prophet and Lace is one of them. But I don't think yeah. this is one of those. And part of that really comes down to, I think we kind of utilize this episode as a little bit of a case study with the Ferengi and the way in which other species kind of react to them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have Kira's reaction, you get Dax's reaction, you get the Dosai's reaction, then you just kind of have the internal reaction of the Ferengi characters to the different things that are happening. And so mm-hmm. there's a lot of different moving pieces and perceptions then of these characters. And I think this episode does a great job of kind of shining the light on the Ferengi in these different ways to help us kind of see them in different ways. And I think especially the character of Quark. And that's kind of what you would want and hope from an episode on the Ferengi. The same way those episodes that we've gotten, say, on the Cardassians. Like, we just talked about Cardassians recently, right? And I think that's one of those things where that episode really kind of helped us dig into who the Cardassians are as a people in a very small microcosmic way. That's probably not even a word, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned you can find something that you love and something that you hate in the Ferengi, and the interactions between Kira and Jadzia in this episode, I think, really highlight that, because they have that whole discussion in Ops about the fact that Kira doesn't like the Ferengi, and she tells Jadzia that you have very strange taste. And Dax, she says everything about them that we see as bad. Yeah, they put too much emphasis on profit. Their behavior towards women is somewhat primitive, she says. And Kira says they're greedy, misogynistic, untrustworthy little trolls, and I wouldn't turn my back on one of them for a second. And Jadzia agrees, yeah, sure. But once you accept that, you'll find they can be a lot of fun. And actually, that line I thought was very apt for watching it today, because it's the thing that we talk about this often on this show in particular, that we've lost in society today, is being able to accept that someone's different than you, and then find the things in them that you do have in common, or that you do enjoy about them. And I think that's exactly what Jadzia is saying here. Like, yeah, you're always going to meet people who have qualities that don't align with yours exactly. And even some that are the opposite, but it doesn't mean they're not good people. It doesn't mean they're not fun. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy being around them and communicate with each other.
The moment, right, that you just write somebody off and you call them a name and you plug them into, you pigeonhole them, right, and you, with broad brush, you just paint everybody in the same light, right? I think that's the thing that Jadzia doesn't do, right? She actually spends time with them. She's getting to know them. And one of the things I think that she can see is that there is a difference in Quark. He hides it really well, or at least he tries to, right? He wants to be the quintessential Ferengi. Mm-hmm. And yet, at the same time, there is a piece of him that these societies have begun to kind of rub off on him and maybe kind of change some of his perceptions and even some of the ways in which he acts, right? He very much puts up walls against that and tries to not let that happen. Mm-hmm. But I think this episode really kind of keys into that is happening. And I think what it also shows is that Jadzia is probably one of the most open-minded people, in the sense that she's truly embracing that idea of the Star Trek value, which is they don't value what I value, but they're also not from my culture. And so who am I to truly really judge them by my standards? And so I need to try and get to know them on their level. And the only way that you can truly find ways to influence and impact other people is by not just outright disregarding them and everything that they are. You're not going to influence anyone well like that. And I think Jadzia knows that too. And so I think we can learn a lot from her in this episode. And I think this episode actually has a lot to say to us today, because too many people are willing to completely disregard somebody who doesn't agree with everything that they agree with or think. You know, if that's your life, honestly, you're never going to find anybody, because nobody's going to agree with you 100% of the time, all the time.
And you drive people away.
Exactly. And that's the thing that also I think Jadzia does such a great job of. She knows I can have a lot of fun with people I don't totally agree with, you know, like And I could maybe learn something from them, and they can learn something from me, because I haven't shut myself. I haven't shunned them like Dwight from The Office. Shun, unshun, reshun. You know, it's like.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I imagine earlier DAX hosts maybe weren't as open as Jadzia is to these things, but it really highlights the cumulative nature of being a Trill, where you gain these experiences life after life after life. And when you get to the point where Jadzia is, she has all these experiences with other races, in this case, Ferengi, she remembers those, and she's a lot more relaxed about things because she just knows more about them in that case. But the other interesting thing about this episode, it's often highlighted as being about gender struggle, which in a sense it is, because it is in a very straightforward way. Pale is a female Ferengi. She's not allowed to earn profit, so she pretends to be a male Ferengi so that she can earn profit. And one thing that I think might get a little bit lost in the story is that she didn't come to the station specifically for Quark. She came because mm-hmm. she saw it as an opportunity, as a place of opportunity to earn profit. And then she fell in love with Quark, which comes out in that conversation with Jadzia.
Right.
But in a bigger picture, I think, and it ties to what we've been talking about the last few minutes, I think the bigger thing here is beyond gender struggle, which is a small box, and instead it's hiding your identity of who you are and also learning to be comfortable with who you are. I think that's the bigger story here. And the writer of the story, Hilary Bader, she's mentioned that one sort of inspiration for her was that when she was growing up, she played baseball mm-hmm. and she had to at least do everything that the boys did, if not pretend to be a boy, she says, and this is in the companion, to fit in, because otherwise she just wouldn't be accepted. And again, that's a gender specific thing. But I also would tie the idea of figuring out who you are and being comfortable into how Quark ultimately reacts to the whole situation as well, because he finds himself in an uncomfortable situation. But you can clearly see in the way it's written and the way that Armin Shimerman plays it really, really well, that, like you said at the beginning, Quark wants to appear to be the quintessential Ferengi mm-hmm. man. Yep. But you can tell that, you know, he's torn about everything that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the interesting things here is that her struggle, and I think this is something, again, that a lot of people could learn in our world from this episode. The struggle is not about her gender. The struggle is about the strict stereotypes that have been placed on gender to say, oh, if you're a boy, you know, you can't like to do ballet. Because mm-hmm. that makes you a girl. That's dumb. That's not how this works. That's not how right. it should work, right? And so I really think that this episode is so much about that. And in that, it's something that I think is truly telling for the world that you know we live in, and a lot of the struggles that people feel forced to try and be something that they're not, or have to not be something they feel like they are, because somebody somewhere made a rule or some mm-hmm. sort of stereotype, and we all have to play along with these stereotypes. And it's like that's not good for human beings to have to live within these weird artificially constructed things. And you know, so yeah, if you're a female, you should be able to like baseball and still feel comfortable and enjoy also being a woman. You know, like mm-hmm. those two things shouldn't be mutually exclusive. You know, mm-hmm. And my wife is a good example of this. She was definitely a tomboy growing up, right? And still very much loves, we like watching sports together, you know, all that kind of stuff. But she also enjoys getting dressed up and going to a friend's wedding and being very mm-hmm. girly girl, you know? So it's like, we have to stop feeling like people just have to be one thing or the other instead mm-hmm. of just, because in the end, that really comes down to like personality, right? Mm-hmm. Pell's personality is somebody who loves the idea of making profit, right? Mm-hmm. I bet you, though, that there's a lot of Ferengi females who, if they were given the opportunity, wouldn't want to do that.
Oh, sure.
You know? Yeah. And so right. That's the beauty, I think, of the way that this episode kind of handles the whole situation. I think they do a really good job of that. And, you know, it does become kind of, I think, a very sad thing. And I think Jadzia does a great job of reminding Quark of that. Yeah, this is sad, and you're going to actually miss her because you're not willing to kind of let go of your own preconceptions about stereotypes, and that you're probably going to regret it. So, which I really liked that she said that to him, and you know, you get the feeling like, yeah, he does. So I always kind of wish she had come back as well. Thought it would have been great if there had been a follow-up.
So let's talk about, because it ties in to the fact that Pell and Quark had this, well, Pell had this interest in Quark, and ultimately I felt by the end that Quark really had this interest in her as well. Of course, there's the kiss at the end, which you wouldn't have expected to see that coming, but there it is at the end. And so I think that Quark also really enjoyed being around Pell, and in another world would have had something, but he's not willing to leave the world that he's accustomed to, so they right. can't run away to the Gamma Quadrant, which was another statement of, you know, sometimes to break free of this stuff, you just have to run away, you have to start over, right? You have to mm-hmm. to find a world or a society where things are different. But the origin of the story, so originally Bader had pitched this to the Next Generation, and I feel like we've talked about this a number of times recently with stories that were original pitches for the Next Generation. Mm. Well, Twilight was one on Enterprise, right, which was a Voyager, Janeway, Chakotay pitch originally before it was Archer and T'Pol. This one, it would have been Pell still, so the same character, but Pell would have been on the Enterprise and would have gotten involved with Riker. And then Beverly would have found out that Pell was female, and then they would have kind of formed a relationship, a sisterhood, kind of hit it off the way that Jadzia and Pell do briefly in this episode. Do you think this would have worked on TNG? To me, it feels like, and I think the reason it ended up here in the first place, it feels like a DS9 story, because for it to truly work, you need a setting where there are a lot of other Ferengi naturally there.
Yes, I also think it feels too much like The Outcast.
That's in that a good sense.
And so therefore, this is one of those places where I think it truly just works best in Deep Space Nine, and like you said, it's because the Ferengi are such a big part of this story already, and had been, of course, in the first season. So it truly make sense to allow the story to just be set here, and it just mm-hmm. feels natural and normal. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those places where I just feel like TNG had done too many of those type of stories with Riker, and it gets a little bit boring to keep telling those stories with him. Because, you know, I mean, I feel like if... It's not true, but it seems like at least once a season, Riker has a story similar to this where it seems like he falls in love with somebody that, you know, something happens and they get torn apart, and it's just like, okay. It's the same thing with, like, you know, this is going to sound terrible, but it's watching through TNG as well, it seems like every season Troy is going to get taken advantage of by some dude. And it's like, I don't know. There were some tropes that they played into too many mm-hmm. times. So
yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. I also think here, for Pale to work, you needed that element of her being able to earn profit, being able to do something that she's not normally allowed to do in her society.
Right.
And for that to work, she needs to be paired with other Ferengi. Specifically, Quark worked really, really well. But I think Quark works well because Quark isn't a stereotypical Ferengi. Of course, he loves profit, but mm-hmm. you know, he's not like Brunt, who I guess we haven't seen yet, right? But he's not that type of Ferengi, right? And so it's possible for this to work with him there. Now, I found Rom to be interesting in this episode because he's still, by this point, Rom had started to become the Rom that we are more familiar with. But here I felt like maybe it was a little bit of a regression. He didn't feel as open-minded towards non-Ferengi ways of doing things mm-hmm. as he normally does. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, that's something that I noticed as I was watching the episode. And I think a part of that was mainly his jealousy about somebody kind of taking his spot mm-hmm. next to his brother.
Yeah.
And so what then came out of that was that rivalry then with Pell, and so it because, you know, that because Pell was a character that was moving in on his perceived territory, he sensed that the best way to do that was kind of double down on his Ferengi-ness, and so I feel like that is the reason that it works still for the story, because that's mm-hmm. very Rom, right? He wants to be by his brother's side, and he did not like that anybody was trying to take that away from him.
Well, and he's especially jealous at how easily Pell negotiated a percentage with Quark. You know how hard it is for Rom to do it.
Well, and the most interesting, I thought, part of that was that it truly seemed like you know, Pell is just so much better at that because of the way in which, because she has this kind of, she ends up kind of having this thing for Quark, it's much easier for her to butter him up in all of the ways, mm-hmm. you know, that you would want. To be buttered up if you're Quark. So
he doesn't even realize he's being buttered up.
Yeah, it's exactly it.
So talking about brothers, transitioning to our next topic of Dominion breadcrumbs, which we have mentioned, but this episode is the first mention of the Dominion mm-hmm. in Deep Space Nine. You know, it happens in an episode where of course, you wouldn't expect it coming up because there was no indication we were headed that way. But even when you look back at the series, it's easy to forget that this is where the first mention came. But there's an additional element related to the Dominion in here, which I think was unintentional at this point, because I know they didn't have any idea where they were going with Odo. But the whole thing about Odo saying, I don't have a brother. Well, not that I know of. If I did have a brother, and then when you think forward to the Great Link and where that goes, that's a much more subtle Dominion founder's mm-hmm. breadcrumb that's placed in there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought that was really interesting to be able to see that whole piece of, you know, Odo's story and in all honesty, I mean, really is just kind of genius work here in the sense that we've talked about it so many times, but they are so good at just giving themselves threads to pull on. And as you mentioned, I have no doubt they have no idea mm-hmm. what they were doing in that sense, that this was going to really go somewhere. But goodness, does it end up going somewhere, which... Yeah. Because they opened that door for themselves, right?
So the writers have said that they put this in here because they had reached the point where they felt that the series was stable on its own, had its own identity, but you've got this gamma quadrant on the other side of the wormhole. And if you don't do anything with it, what's the point of it being there? And so they wanted to build something big in the gamma quadrant, maybe a sort of anti-federation to flesh out the other side of the wormhole and break the Star Trek mold. But they really didn't know yet what they were going to do. Right. And I love that they pretty much wrote that feeling into the story when Quark and Pell are in the ship together. And Quark says, let's just concentrate on the Dominion. I only wish Zaire would have told us more. And Pell says, maybe it's some planetary alliance or trading consortium.
Yep.
It's like the writer saying, we really don't know what it is yet either. It could be this, it could be that, but it's something important.
Yes. Well, and I think what makes that work so well is that that's so true to the way in which in reality these things kind of happen. Like you think of
creatively when you're writing, you mean?
Yeah, but you just think of just in reality, right? When you're trying to figure out how to get to the other side of the world because nobody in the known world has been to the other side of the world, you don't know what's over there, right? So you're like, well, maybe we're going to find, you know, a way to the Orient that's faster. And, you know, it's like that you're making up stories in your mind as to what it could be and who they're going to be and all that. Yeah, and I think that's where this feels very realistic in that sense. Mm-hmm. We don't know who these people are. And so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the first people who we meet who mention the Dominion, of course, are the Docei. I actually laughed this time when they arrived at the station and the airlock door opens and one of them comes flying out because they had thrown, there's a minor disagreement. I was just imagining they probably do that every time they meet somebody for the first time. They probably rehearse it. They've got it all practiced, how they're going to throw one of them out so they can be real tough at the beginning. So the Docei kind of made me laugh.
Yeah, and I mean...
And then the face makeup and everything.
It's one of the most interesting race designs because they all kind of look like bodybuilding supermodels.
Yeah.
Which is it's an interesting choice. It's a choice. And then, of course, the makeup is so bold and bright and kind of odd in that sense. So...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very strange. It was just a strange choice. I don't know why they kind of went that direction, but it was weird.
So Livingston, who directed the episode, mentioned that the Docei were written kind of like comedy, they're kind of humorous the way they were written, but they were also supposed to be this kind of buff race. And so when they did the casting, they started looking for actors who were like that. So that's why we get these very like buff, tough looking. They kind of remind me of Orion's and Enterprise a little bit.
I can 100% see that.
100% not in terms of the makeup or anything, but in terms of the body build, you know, we get we get much buffer Orion's and Enterprise than we had seen previously. Do you feel like they work, though, the Docei work in these negotiations? My feeling is that the comedic element, I kind of understand it. You know, you're playing off the Ferengi, so you've got a little bit of a kind of like comedy ping pong going on here. But for all their toughness, they feel a little bit too comedic to me in the delivery of the lines anyway.
I mean, I agree with that. I think they do come, I think they just come off as a little bit silly. In fact, I would say in a lot of ways, they just kind of come off as the Ferengi did in the Next Generation. Like, this is just a goofy race, nobody's going to take seriously. So, And so it's very interesting to see the Ferengi kind of faced with the same type of race that we all kind of thought of them being in TNG. But now, after a season and a half of Deep Space Nine, you don't really think about them like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's kind of the most interesting part of them. And in the end, I think the beauty of them is that really they're only a stepping stone to kind of get us to the next place, which is mm-hmm. the Dominion, like getting mm-hmm. introductions to the Dominion, which, you know, I thought was really interesting because we don't really explain in any way how Zek knows about the Dominion, right?
Mm-hmm.
But apparently they've got feelers out in the Gamma Quadrant, and he realizes this is the group that they need to be doing business with if they want to make mm-hmm. the big bucks. And so that's the part that I thought was really interesting, is that there's this whole backstory to this episode that never really kind of gets spelled out. And yet, I never question it because, you mm-hmm. know, of course the Ferengi Negus yeah. would be, you know, they basically, it feels like they have secret agents, right?
Yeah.
But their yeah. secret agents are going into different areas to figure out, okay, where's the next place that we can rip people off for profit, you know?
Yeah, yeah, right, right. But it makes sense, of course, that he would be trying to find out what's on the other side of the wormhole and
exactly
and how they could use it to their advantage. So
secret Latinum man, secret Latinum man.
Oh yeah. So the Dos I do mention the Karema, who they show up in the search and a number of episodes after that, and they play a role in the Lower Decks episode, Hear All, Trust Nothing, which takes place on Deep Space Nine, which we discussed on the Orb 142, if you want to go back and hear us talk about Lower Decks one time here on the show. But the Karema give us that next link to the Dominion, ultimately. And my question would be, does it, especially with the Ferengi being the catalyst for all this, or being the vehicle for all of this, does it make more sense that they first met with a somewhat goofy race like the Dosai versus having that first interaction that leads to the Dominion being with the Karema?
I think, obviously, like we mentioned, you know, they didn't know where they were going with the Dominion, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were kind of trying to just, I think, set up plot points for the Gamma Quadrant itself. And so in doing so, I think they did a great job of leaving a lot of options on the table, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it gave them the opportunity to be able to kind of attack this from a lot of different angles. And I think, again, that's just the Deep Space Nine writers were so good at giving themselves a lot of different paths they could go down. And so as they continue writing, you know, you would close different paths because you ended up going in one direction that closed a couple, but might have opened new ones. And so I think that's just the thing about the way in which they worked. And I don't know if it's just dumb luck or really, truly, it was genius. But a lot of the ways this stuff ends up working out, it feels pretty special for the fact that we get what we get and that it works mm-hmm. out the way that it works out.
Yeah.
And so I just have to end up giving them credit because they continue to leave themselves enough right paths that at any moment they can walk down one because it's still open. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, they're just writing
mm-hmm.
to get them to a place where the right next path becomes evident. you know, where it's like, oh yeah, we had that and we can just pull that in and then we can do this. And it seems like it was all on purpose, but really, you know, we know that so much of these early seasons, they're really making up as they go along and hoping that it works. And so,
yeah, well, it's definitely not dumb luck in my eyes. I think it's the result of having a really strong writer's room with a group of really talented writers who collectively their ideas, when they come together, lead to something like the Dominion that we ultimately get, because each person has a little idea here and a little idea there. And then when you start bouncing that off of each other, then ultimately you end up with something. And there was also a little bit of a worry at play. So Ira Stephen Bear has said that, of course, they needed to define the space of DS9, what's in the Gamma Quadrant, and what better way to do that than by creating an extremely pervasive villain. But the worry is that he said, it's true I've done a lot of stuff with the Ferengi, but they're not really villains. I had this fear that my Star Trek tombstone would read, he really made the Ferengi work. And there should be more to a man's life than that.
It's so funny. I mean, you know, it's I think the really fascinating thing to me is that that's it. He does make the Ferengi work. Yeah. And that they should be honestly, I think, really praised for that. They all did a great job in making these characters come to life. And they continually do that throughout the show on every front with every race that they create. And that's the thing that I think is really interesting. And as we mentioned, they created the Dominion. And at this point, they don't know completely what the Dominion is going to be. But arguably, the Dominion become the most scary race next to the Borg that we'll ever see in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And they deserve a ton of credit for that work. The fact that they make the Ferengi in any way likable is pretty dang impressive.
Mm-hmm. I would say the Dominion is scarier than the Borg, because the Borg is mindless, but the Dominion isn't. You know, they're very calculating in what they're doing, and they're not this collective. Well, it's interesting, the similarity with the Great Link and the Borg, where you do have collectives in both cases, but they're very different types of collectives. And then the way that they think and the way they approach things is.
Yeah. I mean, because one different. Is, you know, genetically engineered their collective. And then the other has basically, you know, they've assimilated their collective. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of a terrifying thing. They're in some ways they're both kind of equally scary and everything. Mm-hmm. They do this thing that I don't know if anybody thought to themselves when they're watching Deep Space Nine, right? The first go around, that, oh my gosh, they're going to create the next big villain in Star Trek that will be the scariest thing I've ever seen next to the Borg, but just in a completely different way, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's genius.
Yeah, I mean, my memory in first watch on this is I don't remember even paying that much attention to the Dominion mentions, other than, you know, it's a story element, we need to find them. But even moving past this as we go through the season, it isn't something where I was on the edge of my seat going, oh, I wonder what this is going to turn into. So, all right. Well, what are your final thoughts on this episode and what is your rating?
Yeah, I mean, I give this one a good 4 out of 5 confronts instead of evades, because I think it's just a really good episode. And I love what it does for the character of Quark. I love the way that it kind of deepens the character of Jadzia and who she is. I love the playfulness that we get with Kira, and her trying to kind of understand her friend, and even trying to find a way to even understand the Ferengi more, but just not being able to get there. I love Sisko's few moments in the episode where, I mean, just his facial expressions are priceless. And so, yeah, I think it's just a really strong episode and does so much for the series. So I'm, yeah, 4 out of 5 for me. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I think it's a great episode for the commentary element. So it uses Star Trek in a very effective way to talk about our own world, which is what always drew me to Star Trek originally in the first place. And to do it with the Ferengi, I mean, it's not a surprise at this point. We've become accustomed to the fact that the Ferengi are a good vehicle for commentary. But despite maybe a few missteps in the directing in particular here about, you know, how scenes were set up versus what may have been written that might come off as a little bit cliche. Apart from that, and there's not much of that, I think overall it was very well performed, it was well acted, and I think it has a good message. And of course, the fact that they're able to use it to set up so much of what lies ahead of us is fantastic. So I'm going to give it 50,000 kilos of bryzine nitrate.
Oh my gosh. Well, good. Okay.
All right. Well, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on rules of acquisition. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. It's a closed group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So please do answer those questions and agree to the rules. You'll find a post on the timeline there for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there in the comments. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to us by email. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is trekfm. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not getting your ear hair groomed, where can people find you?
Chris, you said you weren't going to say anything about that.
I left out the word voluptuous. Oh, your voluptuous, well, abundant ear hair. I didn't mention that part.
So. Okay. Well, you could find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. If I'm on the platform, you'll find me under that name. Of course, here on the network, you'll find me outside of all the great Star Trek talk with Chris. I'm doing the 602 Club, talking about all of those other franchises that we love. And you can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network. I got a couple of shows over there. One is completed, called Owl Posts, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then I'm also doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, if people wanted, you know, to catch up with you and, you know, get some culinary advice on what to make their Ferengi visitors, where can people find you?
Yeah, just lots of bugs. That's my advice. Just make sure they haven't lost their crunch. It's very important. You can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing those shows with you. You can also find me in the back catalog on a range of shows. And you can find me in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C, and Brian with a Y. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your help. So thank you to everyone who is supporting the network now. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time when we get out the board games and play a round of Cardassian Clue with Necessary Evil.
Well, Chris, I can't wait for that. But thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.